Here it is in black and white in an official U.S. government planning document authored by the primary author, Henry Kissinger. It's explicitly stated that global population has to be capped at no more than 8 billion. And then there needs to be a series of activities implemented to gradually decrease that population. But that's absolutely necessary.
This is Veronika Kirilenko of the New American Magazine. The scientists have just come up with another fascinating discovery, a fertility gene therapy for cats. Reporting on the breakthrough, Science magazine called it the holy grail of pet contraception, with promising potential to reduce the population of feral animals. The problem is, the viral vector used for this novel technology has a risk of being infectious to other animals and humans. Considering then that the imperative of population control comprises both the ideology and policies of global elites, the advance of such technologies raises serious concerns. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Robert Malone, a brilliant scientist and physician with nearly unmatched expertise in biochemistry and vaccinology, and the inventor of RNA as a drug. Dr. Malone is also the author of the book titled The Lies My Government Told Me and The Better Future Coming. Dr. Malone, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Veronica, thank you for the opportunity to be here with you again. You and I have had many interviews now in which, for some reason, you get me to say things that I'm thinking about that I haven't yet spoken about with other people. So thanks for picking up on this Substack article.
And this is my privilege, sir.
In the topic. Okay.
Doctor, so before we look deeper into population control issues, I'd like to ask you to address in general terms the science behind this fertility gene therapy for cats. How does it work, and what concerns you about its application?
Okay, so launching into it, any time I review a paper, I start off by looking at the institutions involved in the creating of the work that's been published. And in this case, it's pediatric surgery at Harvard. So this is Mass General Hospital, teaming together with a group from the Cincinnati Zoo and their reproductive biology group. So we have a team of zoo specialists that are interested in reproductive health and felids, so the whole cat family in general, working together with a group of specialists at Harvard in pediatric surgery, under funding from a private institute that is focused on the issue of feral cats, largely. Okay, so that's where this is coming from. This is not coming because of a government contract. That's super important in the sense that if your research involving gene therapy or genetic modification is not funded by the federal government, then the federal restrictions on what you can do, the policies and procedures, et cetera, no longer apply. So if you have private funding, you're able to do a lot of things that you would not be able to do under government funding. Just important to set that stage for this particular paper. Interesting that science decided to highlight the tech involved is adeno-associated virus. So this is a different virus from adenovirus. Adenovirus vectors are what was used for the J&J SARS-CoV-2 or COVID vaccine. And AAV has a similar name, adeno-associated virus, but it's a smaller particle that is often present in an adenovirus infection. Adenovirus causes another cause of the common cold, and has various different strains, and AAV has various different strains. And beginning in the early 1990s to mid-1990s, There was a succession of viral-based gene therapy technologies developed, starting in really in the 70s with retroviruses, which absolutely integrated into the genome, to in the late 80s, early 90s, the development of adenovirus-vectored gene therapy, and then its application for adenovirus-vectored vaccines. And then, among others, including classical gene therapy, and generally, adeno-vectored vaccines and gene therapy don't last very long. And that's a problem if you want to do a permanent modification. Now, a lot of us might say after the last 3 years that the idea of a permanent genetic modification may not be such a good idea. But that's the logic in the gene therapy business, is you want something that you can inject that would change the genome, change the genetic makeup of the recipient of the injection, so that they would produce a protein that would be potentially beneficial over a long period of time. Now, the problem with all of that is that if the injected gene produces a protein that is different from the proteins that your body normally produces, your body will generate an immune response against it, including both an antibody and a cellular immune response that will kill the cells that have the foreign gene. We're now, it used to be if I would talk about this 3 years ago, I would get looks of confusion. But now I think after we've been through all we've been through, a lot of people understand these core concepts. Okay, so AAV was developed as a next generation viral vector because adenovirus didn't work very well. AAV is a relatively small particle, and it is even more constrained in terms of how much genetic information you can stuff into it. Now, AAV vectors are normally replication deficient, but in the case of this particular vector, the paper discloses that the vector, the virus, recombinant virus, was shed from these injected cats for days after they were injected. In other words, the gene therapy, recombinant gene therapy, apparently, according to the paper, continued to be produced and was released from the cats in what I infer is an infectious particle, so that in theory, people that are around these cats for a few days after they've been injected could receive that adeno-associated virus vectored product. Now, what there are a number of different adeno-associated viruses that can be genetically modified like this. They come in different strains, and the strains are numbered. This particular one is AAV9. So the first question to ask yourself when you read the part that the cats, after intramuscular injection, continue to shed the virus for a few days, then your mind immediately goes to, so what? Does it infect humans? And the answer is AAV9 infects humans. It crosses the blood-brain barrier, and it has a particular spectrum of infectivity. It infects neurons very efficiently. So if you want to modify somebody's brain, the best way to do it, one of the best technologies right now, if you want to genetically modify somebody's brain and the neurons in their brain, as opposed to the glial cells or other components of the brain mass, then AAV9 would be the way that you would do it. So then the next question comes up, well, what did they do about safety on this study? How did they assess safety? And did anybody work through the issues of whether or not this would be safe and what to do about it? Safety is not addressed in the experimental methods or the other discussion
I'm sorry,
sections
by safety, you
for
mean
this.
safety for cats or safety for humans?
in particular, safety for others that might be encountering these injected cats. Okay.
Okay.
And it gets to the core issue, is it a good idea to do something like this? And who has responsibility for oversight to make a determination, yes, this is a good idea to do this kind of experiment, or no, or maybe with some restrictions to ensure safety for the developmental phase and the testing. So was any of that done? Was this subjected to biosafety review? There's no indication in the paper that there was a formal third-party objective assessment of the potential safety risks for doing this experimental research. Now, I've written to the lead author from Harvard and asked him if he would take some questions from me. And I specifically am going to ask him about this, but right now they haven't had no chance to respond. So all I know is that in the manuscript itself, it doesn't seem to discuss safety oversight for the experimentation. It does say that this was done at biosafety level two. What biosafety level two means is it's basically at the bench level. So biosafety level two is the type of biosafety precautions that undergraduates are taught when they're taking training on doing basics of recombinant DNA. Biosafety level two is not a containment protocol. And so I infer, based on the paper and what it's reporting, that these cats that were injected with this AAV9 that would potentially cross the blood-brain barrier if humans were exposed to it, and potentially would infect neurons because that is its particular tropism, and cause those human neurons, if they were infected, to produce this particular protein that this Mullerian inhibitory factor in the brains of any of the technicians, for instance, that would be managing these cats, or eventually, if this was ever to come to light, it would be in this embodiment of the technology, anybody in contact with a cat for the few days after they've been injected,
So
including other cats, by the way.
AA9 affects neurons if
AAV9.
AAV9 affects neurons in humans, but the Nature's
Crosses the
paper.
blood-brain barrier and infects human neurons. And
Yes.
that's that paper that I sent you, that review paper, so you can document.
But the Nature paper says that it affects anti-Müllerian hormone in cats, but we know that the same hormone is produced in humans as well, and it regulates our reproductive health too, in
Yes,
both
so
men and women.
just so anti-Müllerian hormone, among other things, is key. It plays a key role in the development of ovarian follicles in women. And this gets to another aspect of the safety that should have been addressed, which is, as shown by their initial set of experiments, there's two sets of experiments here described in this paper. In the first set, they used a gene construct for the anti-Müllerian hormone that was not perfectly identical to normal cat sequences. And in those, about half the cats, maybe it's two out of three, developed antibodies to that protein, which was seen as a foreign protein because it wasn't a perfect replica. Then they got new sequence from another generation of cat genome sequencing in which they had the full length consensus sequence for that protein. And then they made a new vector that was more accurately reflective of feline anti-Müllerian hormone. And none of those cats so injected mounted an immune response against it because this is what they're producing is truly a self protein, a cat protein. So the cats don't see it as a foreign antigen. They see it as self. One of the problems, so what one could imagine, and I can only hope that there was a biosafety committee and they did discuss this, because if they didn't, it's a little stunning to me.
The publication seems worrying because when put into a context of population control advocated for by powerful international organizations such as the United Nations and the World Economic Forum, as well as national governments, even though the latter in many cases are becoming increasingly redundant considering the level of their subjugation to supranational entities. But still, what's your take? Well, speaking.
So, Veronica, let me finish the thought thread.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Please go
So,
ahead.
let's imagine that these cats do shed this recombinant, properly constructed feline anti-Malarian hormone AAV9. And some humans come in contact with this and get infected by it. What could possibly go wrong? That would result in those humans producing a protein that would be the cat version of a natural human protein. And typically, what happens when you have that type of a xenobiologic crossover, in other words, trans species, is that the recipient of the cat protein, the human recipient of the cat protein, would mount an immune response against the cat protein that would cross over and also interfere with the human protein. So this is a real risk in terms of human reproductive health, which seems to have been completely overlooked in this crush to celebrate this major achievement. And in a sense, it is an important advance in understanding reproductive biology of cats, that you can produce super levels of this protein. Of course, you could do that before by just injecting the purified protein. So it's not that much of a leap. But it's considered clearly by Science Magazine a major win for the gene therapy world, which has repeatedly been frustrated. They have not had many wins at all. The technology is flawed in many ways, conceptually. And you can bang around in terms of trying to advance the nuance of the technology, but you're still not overcoming the fundamental problems. So if you were to ask the question, Veronica, is this a potential risk for human reproductive health? I would have to say, until we're proven otherwise, I would have, if I was on a review committee, I would say this should not be allowed to proceed. Or if it is allowed to proceed, it should only be done under very carefully controlled conditions, because you wouldn't want this recombinant virus to be out in the world.
In 1988, the John Birch Society produced a documentary so predictive, it's as though they had a time machine. Out of Control: Immigration Invasion was produced and hosted by investigative reporter William F. Jasper and looks at the growing problem of unrestricted illegal immigration that, in 1988, already saw upwards of 10 to 20 million illegal aliens within the borders of the U.S. Unknown agents from around the world using the southern border as easy entry. Certainly, some are innocent families escaping hardship, but also certainly some are criminals, potentially terrorists. Is it not appropriate that there be some criteria for the entry of any sovereign nation? Why should the U.S. be different than Canada, Germany, Russia, Japan, or every other country on the planet? Out of Control: Immigration Invasion. Watch this time capsule of prescient wisdom at thenewamerican.com/out of control. Freedom is the cure.
You're dead on. This is the largest experiment performed on human beings in the history of the world.
The more you know.
What they're doing is they're forcing vaccination on people, and I believe they are killing people with this vaccination.
The freer you are.
It's murder. They are basically murdering people in hospitals.
The all-cause mortality, we know, is now higher in the vaccinated group than the unvaccinated group.
Stay informed on the issues that affect freedom. Get a subscription to The New American today, thenewamerican.com.
Now, that gets to the question that you were just asking and the point you were just making. Do we have we could call it a global elite, or we could call it a group of individuals with an agenda relating to human population control? Is there evidence for that? Because it's something that we've heard talked about again and again and again over the last 3 years, the speculation that this virus or the vaccines themselves, presumably, you know, the putative vaccines that don't actually protect against infection, replication, or spread, or death or disease, could they be part of a depopulation agenda, particularly one that targets, for instance, the elderly, since we've seen so much death and disability in the elderly? Or the recent kerfuffle with Bobby Kennedy disclosing the proven truth that this virus, whether intentionally or unintentionally, is relatively selective in its pathology for certain ethnic groups. That is a proven fact. That's not Bobby Kennedy propagandizing. It's not Bobby Kennedy talking about his endorsement of that as a technology or as a frontier, unlike what the corporate media has tried to present. But rather, it's Bobby Kennedy saying, this is truth. We now have a proof of concept of something that the military-industrial complex, or the biologic military-industrial complex, has been talking about for a very long time, which is that it is conceptually possible to engineer pathogens to be ethnically selective. This is part of the reason why there's so much concern about 21andMe and these other genetic screening, screening technologies that are providing information about all of our genomes to anybody that wants to pay for it. It's long been discussed. I've heard those discussions that pathogens could be genetically engineered to be relatively selective for purposes of biowarfare for different ethnic populations. There's rampant speculation, unproven, that this was one of the agendas in progress at the Ukrainian biolabs, which were first denied, and then Victoria Nuland acknowledged that they existed. And you'll recall that Mr. Putin and his government asserted that one of the things that was going on in those Ukrainian biolabs was genetic engineering of pathogens to be relatively selective for ethnic Russians. And of course, the United States denied that categorically. There's no way that would possibly be the case. But the truth is that has been a topic, whether or not it was happening in those biolabs, it has been a topic that's been discussed. And the SARS-CoV-2, whether intentionally or unintentionally, absolutely validates that that's feasible. Do we have any, I've been very resistant to this issue and these hypotheses about there being a depopulation agenda associated with this COVID crisis public health response. But you can't deny that from a public health standpoint, a lot of the public policies make no sense at all. They're completely nonsensical. And if you start as a hypothesis, just for the sake of discussion, that there might have been a population control or depopulation agenda, and you can't deny that it would be convenient for nation states that are facing a wave of financial burden associated with the elderly population as it ages out and demands, requires more medical care. And we absolutely see things like the Trudeau regime advancing the legality of assisted suicide for elderly. Is there any evidence that there is a global consensus or momentum around a depopulation agenda? And this is why I forwarded to you that formerly classified Kissinger report, which just came to my desk a couple of days ago. I've never seen it before.
And dated 1974. It's not
right. It was developed. So Kissinger developed it, but it was classified for a very long time. Developed it at the behest of Richard Nixon. And let's recall that Kissinger is, I'm just stating facts, Kissinger is the mentor of Klaus Schwab. And in it, there is clear advocacy for advancing a depopulation and birth control agenda, particularly for emerging economy countries, which are perceived as responsible for the burden of the vast majority of the population growth globally. And when you read through that shocking report, it basically advances a lot of the logic that many have spoken about as, and been labeled as conspiracy theorists. But here it is in black and white in an official US government planning document authored by the primary author, Henry Kissinger, in which it's explicitly stated that global population has to be capped at no more than 8 billion. And then there needs to be a series of activities implemented to gradually decrease that population, that's absolutely necessary. This is the Malthusian logic that so many have objected to, that the earth is limited in its resources and that man is outstripping those resources. And the only solution is not innovation, not use of persuasion, education, et cetera, not economic development so that people no longer have that strong incentive to have very large families because they can't support themselves in their old age, but rather various surreptitious measures that would restrict the ability of particularly populations in emerging economies from reproducing. So could this, I'm not saying that this is the case. I mean, that's why I laid out who is the sponsor, who are the parties involved. These are zoo people cooperating with a high-tech lab in pediatric surgery at Harvard under funding from a private institute party donor that is, has the best of intentions in trying to reduce the burden of feral cats. Advancing a technology that will undoubtedly have unforeseen consequences, and apparently doing it without any systematic review at Harvard or at the Cleveland Zoo of what could possibly go wrong. And in my opinion, this is emblematic of what's really going wrong here, is all through modern biology, is that we're allowing academics and academic institutions that have a vested interest in pulling in money to provide the oversight of whether or not a biologic engineering experiment and the potential downstream consequences are wise. And I'm very, very attuned to this. People, make allusions to Oppenheimer when they talk about me and the mRNA vaccine technology. From my own experience, I can absolutely validate that once a technology is out of the box, this is, this is one of those situations. Once a technology, no matter how well-intended, becomes public, it will be weaponized. That is irrefutable. It happens again and again. This is Pandora's box, the metaphor of Pandora's box. Once the box is opened, you can never get the devils back in. And they will be weaponized. And somehow we have got to get to the point, in my opinion, where we have some neutral, independent body that is committed to ethics and humanity, that is empowered to make go, no-go decisions about whether or not advancing these technologies is a good idea and what the potential risks are. And I think what we've seen over the last 3 years is we cannot rely on academics to do that. Mm-hmm. We can't rely on the government to do that. Who are we going to have do that? The CDC, the FDA, right? The FDA is just going to roll over and, you know, to pharma and say, scratch my belly, pant, 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 right? That's how they're wired right now. There is no independent body right now, and no independent entity or advocacy for instance, renegotiating the biowarfare treaty. Mm-hmm. So I think that this paper, which from the standpoint of a gene therapy technologist or an AAV specialist, is very exciting. Because it provides a proof of concept that if you express a self protein that is identical to the normal one, that you can cause a biologic effect, in this case, sterilization, long-term sterilization of cats. But beyond that, is this a good thing? Is genetic modification of mammals using this kind of technology a good idea? Are we sufficiently mature in advance to be able to anticipate the blowback, the unforeseen consequences? And all the data that I'm seeing says, no, we're not.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you one question that really bothers me. If we go back to the topic of ideology of population control, you know, one of the topics that you have been covering extensively in your writing on your Substack is the fifth generation warfare unleashed on Western populations during the COVID crisis to psychologically manipulate us into accepting medical tyranny. And since the tactics have proven to be so successful, why not make them the primary tool for managing public attitude towards childbirth? And besides, the global fertility trend has been on a constant decline for the past 70 years. So what's the rationale?
In Western countries.
Not only in Western countries. The WEF says it's been like that all over the globe. It's a median trend. And yeah, I can send you the link to that.
Veronica, if you
So I'm sorry, my question is to you, what's the rationale behind biological tools such as fertility therapies? Is it greed, or are we not dying fast enough? So what are your thoughts on this?
So first off, regarding using PSYOPs, psychological manipulation, you can call it education, you can put lipstick on the pig in whatever way you want. It has been deployed. Those of us, I know you didn't grow up here in the States, but I did. My wife did. We were absolutely subjected to what we can now see in retrospect was propaganda in the schools by the U.S. government, fomented by the U.S. government, about the importance of limiting family size to two. Now, in retrospect, I wish we had had more kids. That's the truth of it. Although at the time when we were having children, I don't know that I could have handled any more than two. But in retrospect, I sure wish we'd had a daughter. I wish that we'd had more children. We were propagandized that it was the right and proper thing for an American to limit family size to two. And so we did so. So that the point that I'm trying to make is that the deployment of PSYOPs by the government around the topic area of reproductive health and family planning has been ongoing for a very long time, since the late 50s at least, and has been quite successful in the US and in Europe. And in China and the CCP, of course, this was done in a very heavy-handed way, in that you were prevented by the state, by mandate, from having larger families, and they would come in and take action against you, which resulted in all kinds of unforeseen consequences, like Chinese families engaging in infanticide for female offspring. Because they wanted to have males, because in the culture that was much more valued. And if they can only have so many children, one, for instance, you want to have that one be a boy. The consequence is that the Chinese government is facing a population cliff and a pronounced gender bias in their population currently. So this kind of central planning has a long history of unintended blowback. Why would, I read your questions beforehand, why would globalists wish to enable a biologic technology when their psyops and propaganda technologies are being so effective? Together with other, you know, we know that it's clearly documented that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation have introduced sterilizing vaccines into Africa, for instance, into African as test products, into African young African women of reproductive age. So this approach of weaponizing medical interventions to advance a birth control agenda is clearly there. It has been deployed. It's discussed at length in Bobby Kennedy's book, The Real Anthony Fauci, among others, with citations. So why would they want to advance this AAV9 technology? And in my opinion, the answer is they didn't. That this is an example of this unintended consequences cascade, where you have a Wild West environment for biologic research. I don't see any signs of the fingerprints of any of the globalist organizations that you and I can discuss at length in sponsoring this research. That's part of why I spoke about it at the outset. Who are the sponsors? This appears to be sponsored by a foundation that is seeking to do good. And I'm reminded of this, the truism, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And that's why we have to have some independent third party organization that's empowered to be able to assess these things independently and anticipate to the best possible what the unintended consequences might be. And even then, we're still going to get it wrong. We need to err on the side of no, not erring on the side of yes, because isn't this cool? And that's kind of what it comes down to, is the dynamics of the cool kids, the scientific cool kids, getting to play with their toys and doing stuff to get a nice, fat, juicy paper in Nature, and attention from Science Magazine, and promotions, and tenure, and blah blah blah. That motivation, that logic, has got to stop. We have to put a cap on that.
Do you see yourself as a part of such an independent body of experts who would be guided by ideas and values of humanity and
If I was asked to serve in that role, it would be my honor to do so. I'm not at the level of influence and pay grade to drive something like this. But if, for instance, a new president, or if we had a turnover at the World Health Organization, for instance, not like that's going to happen. I think my position on all of this, as we were discussing prior to the start of the broadcast, I have no interest in politics, just to be clear. I do not like DC. I do not like DC culture. I don't intend to run for office. But if I was asked to serve by my country, of course I would serve. To do otherwise would not be patriotic, would not be ethical.
But you do belong
to this. That's my stand.
Thank you. Yeah, you do belong to this international COVID summit that gathered together so many independent experts who were appalled by everything that they have seen during the COVID crisis. Can it be maybe a start for such an organization?
Veronica, that's a great idea. And I'll talk to the primary organizers. We're talking about changing the name to the International Crisis Summit because COVID is so yesterday, except for now the postmortem of who did what and why.
And the vaccine injuries are still relevant, aren't they?
Absolutely. It's ongoing. The tragedy of that is ongoing. But the pressure of trying to get the word out to people in real time to educate them about what's really happening and about the risks of the vaccine, the risks of the drugs, the availability of other treatment strategies, the importance of maintaining good health and reducing, you know, losing weight, just like your husband has done and I'm on track doing. I was over 190 and I'm now mid-160s. Those, you know, eating healthy, living healthy, reducing weight, all of that has been part of the messaging that, of course, was not shared by any of our governments, which, again, makes it hard to square the circle about what's been done to all of us, because if they really cared about saving lives, they would have been strongly advocating for early treatment, healthy living, reducing body weight, and all the associated things, and yet they didn't, which is really strange.
Doctor, what's your word of advice to people who are trying to protect themselves from intended and unintended consequences of everything that's going on with bioweapons and novel gene therapies?
For the layperson, the middle class, for the underclasses, and it seems like these days we're all underclass, unless we're in that fraction of 1%. It's hard to see a way forward other than that which we discuss in the book, which is the development of intentional communities and kind of going to ground, whether it's the revolutionary act of growing your own food or the revolutionary act of homesteading or the revolutionary act of homeschooling your children. All of those are in the development of intentional communities around that kind of approach and that logic and ethic. We don't have a whole lot of other options. They are clearly intending to weaponize the banking sector through central bank digital currency and digital IDs. And I think we're facing, you know, you'll recall the use of this scare term or fear porn, dark winter, that goes back in history through the biowarfare enterprise. But we kind of are facing a dark period, I think. And the New American, of course, has been a champion in helping to alert American conservatives about the risks here. The only option, really practically, we have is through political activism, which is increasingly difficult to do in this environment where the media is all controlled and free expression is controlled and the all the various tools and tricks of fifth generation warfare, including the defamation and censorship that's deployed on anybody that speaks out against the agenda, the approved storyline, makes it very, very difficult for us to coalesce, share ideas, investigate and consider other options. And so we're forced into a situation where a minority position like that of American conservatives, many of whom no longer associate with the Republican Party, they're having to find each other and form communities. And again, the New American has been a leading voice, I think, as has the John Birch Society, through the last 3 years. And, you know, together with the constitutionalist movement, I think that these are our only options, is to find each other, build community with each other, take the time to really think through these policies and their consequences, and discuss with each other what our options are. And clearly, in this series that you're in the middle of, and all of your work, you're helping facilitate that as one example.
Thank you, Doctor. I would like to thank you so much for the work that you do and for the time you took today to speak with me. Doctor, please tell us, what's the best way to follow you and your work, and where can we buy your book?
Okay. In theory, Mike Lindell is selling the book, but most people go to Amazon still, I'm afraid. Barnes & Noble sells it. The truth be told, we are working on some additional books about fifth generation warfare and about family life, having a successful marriage. Books are not particularly lucrative. If we had to rely on book sales, our horses would go hungry. And so it's rwmalonemd.substack.com is what supports us these days. And it's all free to anybody, but a small subset decide to subscribe at $5 a month. And that's what keeps us financially afloat. And then there's also Malone Institute. So maloneinstitute.org. We'll be posting the Kissinger report there. On social media, Getter, Gab, Truth Social, and of course, Twitter, at RWMaloneMD. Thanks.
Thank you. That was Dr. Robert Malone. Thank you so much for watching. I'm Veronica Kirilenko of The New American Magazine.
All right, parents, listen up. We've all seen the countless examples of how radical leftists have been destroying American schools. It's no longer just about the terrible math and reading levels. Now radical left teachers birthed from liberal universities are forcing gender indoctrination in kindergarten. They're teaching lessons on white guilt.
Freedom Project Academy has perfected live online learning over the course of a decade. I get a ton of great feedback about this program, a ton.
They're built on Judeo-Christian values, a classical curriculum. What does that mean? It means they're taught, your children are taught the way that the founding generations of the country. My own son, Noah, did Freedom Project Academy for several years when he was younger.
The more we tell our friends about these things, the more people will get on board. And I believe that we can be the catalyst to some real change.
We must save the West. Our way of life and our culture is under attack. And because of patriots like you and your project, I have optimism for the future.